Talk Central is brought to you by CloudGate, a micro mega company. All the power of a PC, the flexibility of Android, all at a fraction of the cost. For homework or play, available at takealot.com or cloudgate.co.za for only $1,999.
I'm Reinhard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central episode 123 for the weekend starting 6 March 2015.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No headlines like Tokoloshi made me a sex slave on Tech Central.
No, on Talk Central this week, we talk about Cabinet's confusing statement on set-top box control and what it really means.
Also, we chat about the best of Mobile World Congress 2015.
And we talk about deal-making in the mobile industry in South Africa.
Before we get to that, though, we need to pay the bills. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Vox Telecom Cloud is the future of business. Developed from the ground up, it's a turnkey, fully managed approach to the cloud. It offers you guaranteed support, a national network with true redundancy, fully managed services across all layers, and most importantly, a single point of accountability. The Vox Telecom Cloud. It's how cloud should be. To find out more about the Vox Telecom Cloud, SMS your name to 45454 or visit voxtelecom.co.za. Standard rates apply.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Rafat?
How's it, Duncan?
Good, thank you. So, Mobile World Congress this week, dominating all the headlines. Have you been watching events?
Yeah, I've been following it. There's only a few headlines that really jumped out at me. It seems like it was a good one. I'm glad I didn't go. I can imagine those crowds might have been
I was there last year. The place is complete insanity. I mean, it's the whole city of Barcelona gets taken over, and by all accounts, this year's event was even bigger.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, I'm glad I didn't go, but I like what I've seen, especially from Samsung and HTC. You know, they've got new phones out.
Samsung really stole the show this year, didn't they?
They did, yeah. I think they brought something new and interesting to the table with that curved screen. The fact that it looks a lot like the iPhone 6 is a bit debatable.
Yeah, this is the Galaxy S6 Edge. So two models this year, whereas previous years they've just announced one. We had the S5 last year, which really was, I think, a bit of a disappointment, and certainly reflected in the sales of the devices. And certainly we've seen over the last year Apple taking back a lot of market share that Samsung, I think, had taken with the Galaxy S4 device. They're fighting back hard, and I think they have to. But the two new devices, there's the Samsung Galaxy S6, which looks like an iteration or an evolution on the Galaxy S5. And they've announced the Galaxy S6 Edge as well, which is this device with curved edges. And I'm not convinced yet whether it's more than just a gimmick.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I looked at the Note Edge, and as nice as it was because it was something new, I don't know how functional it is in your daily life to have a curved screen. And how practical it is from a stability point of view. If that thing falls, won't it crack easier? Especially for the curved side.
I mean, it's using the latest version of Gorilla Glass, But still, that device is by all accounts going to come in at quite a premium to the regular S6. I like what they've done with the software, though. They've definitely cleaned it up a lot, much more than they did the S5. They really did some cleanup work with the S5 over the S4. They're now promising you'll never go into a menu where you'll have to scroll. Everything will be there. It's been dramatically simplified.
They got rid of a lot of bloatware, I think.
There was a lot of crap on there.
Especially the features that they used to bundle in their devices, like scrolling with your eyes and wave gesture control.
Yes.
It's good to see that they've done away with those things and focused on the operating system as a functional tool rather than trying to pack everything in the kitchen sink.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was one of the criticisms of Samsung in the past, was they really just did throw everything in there and see what stuck. Which is exactly the opposite approach that Apple's taken. So I think perhaps they've borrowed more of an Apple approach this time around than ever before, including arguably in the design. And as one website I saw yesterday had a bit of a joke about it, and said the headline of the story was Samsung unveils its best iPhone yet. Which of course Samsung didn't appreciate at all.
That sums it up perfectly. But you know, you can't really, as much as I don't want to see devices look so much the same, I mean, you can't fault the design on the iPhone 6. It's a good looking device. I guess you can't do much with a small thin device and rounded edges other than that kind of design that iPhones come up with.
Sure.
But I
think the one thing they mentioned in the keynote that they did was that if the phone is lying upside down on the table, you know, if your boss phones, the edges of the device could glow a certain color, so that you know to take the call. And I'm sure app developers will come up with with a whole range of different apps that take advantage of those edges, do cool things with those edges. But I still can't help thinking it's a bit gimmicky. I don't think I'd really want an edge, especially not at a big price premium.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? It's probably going to be incredibly popular, and people are going to stumble over themselves to get it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's got a loyal following. It's also, I would be interested to see the wireless charging that they were talking about. Never having to, you know, we've seen the technology before. But
because, of course, for the first time, these batteries are not removable in the Galaxy S device, which is a controversial move, because I think in the past, Samsung has boasted about the fact that its batteries are removable versus the iPhones, which are not. If I have one real criticism of the new Galaxy S devices, though, it's the batteries. They're only around 2,500 or 2,600 milliamp hours, whereas all of their competitors in this sort of class are pushing 3,300 milliamp hours.
What's a practical lifespan of those Samsung batteries that you've tested?
I haven't used a Galaxy S5, but certainly all the predecessors, the S3 and the S4, the battery life on them was absolutely atrocious. And I don't know if Samsung's done enough here in terms of the sheer capacity of the battery to address that problem. But of course, a lot of the battery drain issues are to do with the software, not the size of the battery. I mean, I'm using the Sony Xperia Z3 at the moment, which is an absolutely brilliant phone. I don't think its battery is particularly huge. I stand to be corrected, but I think it's under 3,000 milliamp hours. But if I use this thing exceptionally heavily all day long, I still have juice left at the end of the day. If I use it lightly, I can run this device for 2 days without charging it. The same certainly can't be said for earlier generations of the Samsung Galaxy S lineup.
So maybe the strategy of reducing the bloatware in the operating system was a very good one, in that they can get away with a built-in battery and prolong that battery life. And if their wireless charging works, and they it's not too expensive to get that base kit, then good work. It could potentially be a good deal.
Of course, they are throwing the most high-end processor at this new device, which one hopes it's more battery efficient, but you know, with high clock speeds, one wonders if it's gonna be a battery drain as well. An octa core processor, do we really need that inside a inside a phone?
Look, I mean, I don't know if they're going to be taking that their virtual reality functionality a bit further, but potentially this could be a precursor to this. You know,
they announced an update to that as well. The Galaxy, what's it called? The Galaxy Gear, I think.
Yeah, the Gear.
No, that's the watch.
Yeah.
I forget what it's called. Galaxy VR or something.
Galaxy VR.
No, they did announce an update to that as well. Interestingly, not much focus this year, if any, on the Samsung watches. Last year, the Galaxy S5 was linked to the launch of the watches. Nothing this year. So
I think the hype has kind of played it out after Apple's announcement, and now everybody's waiting to see that physically, you know, in stores. And then
it's never stopped Samsung before, though, to try and preempt whatever Apple does.
It was good not to see as many of those gimmicky things this year.
True. And of course, the big Apple keynote's happening this Monday.
Oh, yeah.
Monday night, Apple Watch launch.
So I think, then maybe the watch talk will definitely start up again, and we'll start comparing devices in detail again. But another announcement at Mobile World Congress was the HTC One M9.
Bit disappointing, I thought.
Yeah, they kept the design almost identical to the previous one. Yeah. It looks certainly from
the camera
distance.
Looks a bit different. It's squarer design.
And it protrudes a bit at the back.
Yeah. So 20 megapixel, is it?
Yes.
Compared to the 4 megapixel ultra pixel camera that they had in there before, which was extremely controversial.
Yeah, it's certainly about time that they do that. But is it enough? I mean, now that we've seen this phone last year already with this design, is it enough of a pull for people to upgrade to this?
If you've got an M8, probably not. If you've got an M7 and you like the brand, maybe.
Look, it's still nice looking. I like the design of the One M8. I thought it was a great looking phone. This is what it should have been. And
It fixes what the M8 should have been, exactly, especially in the camera department.
Yeah.
Although people who've played with the camera at Mobile World Congress don't seem all that impressed with it.
I wonder why.
It must be a step up from the 4 megapixel they had in there before.
Yeah. No, it must be. I mean, and you can't fault, you know, even if you have to cut that 20 megapixel down to a 10 megapixel through cropping, you know, it's still better than what it was.
That's one area, by the way, that Samsung seems to have done some very good work with the S6 is in the camera department. I mean, we still need to experiment with it, but they've gone for an f1.9 camera, which they say is going to be brilliant in low light conditions. And in fact, during the keynote, they very specifically compared the output of the camera in low light conditions next to the output from an iPhone 6. Obviously Samsung is going to take pictures that
work better for their
purposes. But you know, if if what they demonstrated on stage translates into real world photography, then I think Samsung may have a really good camera in that S6 that actually might beat the iPhone 6's camera.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I would look forward to see it. But remember, a lot of it is not about the camera, it's about the photographer, right?
Indeed.
You just need a good base to start from.
And iPhone camera photographers are better than Samsung. Or something like that.
Especially with the Oloclip attached, I think so.
Oloclip, yes.
Yeah.
You can get Oloclip for Samsung, though.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they do this design, because you know, on the iPhone, the cameras are situated on top, on both sides, the front and the back, where deeper on the HTC.
The HTC. There's not Oloclip for HTC, though. I think it's only for Samsung.
Yeah, but still, it's got the same. I think that lens seem a bit far down.
Yeah. Oh, it is. The lens is quite far down, isn't it, on the S6? Interesting.
Anyway, there's a lot of clip-ons you get. I've seen those that you actually clip on like a U-clamp over it.
Yeah.
They don't look as nice, but it's just a piece of glass that you put over it.
Yeah.
HTC also spoke about their new virtual reality at the Mobile World Congress.
The Vive.
Vive.
What's your pronounce it? Tell us a bit about that. You've had a look there, Richard.
It seems people have been raving about it, and there's been some interesting headlines where people will say it could be the best virtual reality they've seen. Obviously, this is yet to be seen, but essentially what it looks like is the HTC Vive is a headset similar to the Oculus Rift in that you put it on your face, over your eyes.
Yeah.
But what is different about the Vive is the fact that if you look at the Oculus Rift, it's got a tracking system built onto the device that look outwards. So it tracks the room around you. With the Vive, what you have is you have cameras not only on the device itself that sends out sensors that pick up the room around you. So it's not just a single camera.
Mm.
But there's also in the corners of the room you can install what they say is lighthouse transmitters. And apparently what this does is it really positions you in the room and it's able to build this virtual world around you. And what some of the guys that have had this demo, that has gone through the demo, said that you're actually able to interact with things a lot more accurately than you would have been able to with any other virtual reality systems they've seen to date. Seems interesting. Obviously, we'll need to see it in practical terms. But looks very interesting.
Yeah, it does look cool. I'm looking forward to seeing the Microsoft one as well. There's quite so many players in the space now. You've got Facebook with the Oculus Rift. You've got HTC. You've got Samsung and Microsoft. And that's just the ones I can think of off the top of my head.
And what I liked about Microsoft, and this should be noticed, a big difference is where these are virtual reality headsets, what you see is a completely digital world.
Mm.
Microsoft it's an overlay.
It's augmented reality,
which I find in some certain circumstances could be a lot more useful.
I think in a work environment, certainly.
Or even if you're playing games from the couch. I mean, when you actually make use of your living room, playing Minecraft in that demo, like they showed in the demo, which was very interesting.
You can see when your dog's about to come and drool.
No, we're certainly living in exciting times for this virtual reality. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this pans out, especially if you start walking around in a room to really get the best out of that world.
Anyway, take a look at TechCentral over this weekend. Our colleague Sunil Gopal has compiled a list of what he thinks are the top 10 coolest things that came out of Mobile World Congress this year, and we'll be publishing that this weekend. So go and check that out on the website. I think let's move on, Rechot. I want to talk a bit. Actually, I want to talk quite a lot about.
There's a lot to say
about this cabinet announcement yesterday. That the set-top boxes that are going to be used for digital migration will have a control system, in inverted commas. I've been talking to a couple of radio stations, actually, doing interviews with a couple of radio stations in the last day or so about this, and trying to distill all of this down into just a few sound bites is really difficult because it's such a complex subject. But let me attempt to do it one more time for the purpose of this podcast, and let me try and keep it in a sort of 3 to 5 minute segment without ranting too much. It's basically what the cabinet has said is that there's going to be a control system. They then said that the definition of this, what they mean by a control system, is still to be determined in the final policy on broadcast digital migration, which is going to be published at some future date. They haven't said when. I'm guessing it'll be sometime in the next few weeks or few months at most. I'm guessing in the next few weeks, because they really have to get a move on with this. Immediately, both sides in this debate, and let's sort of group them in two camps. We've got the multi-choice camp, which has organizations like NAMIC and the SABC supporting their viewpoint against encryption in set-top boxes. And then you've got the ETV camp, which has the South African Communications Forum and various other entities in favor of encryption in set-top boxes. Now, I think there's a lot of confusion that's emanated in everyone's minds over the last year or so about what exactly is meant by encryption and control. My understanding of it is that these things are not necessarily the same. That you can have a basic control system, call it a security system built into these set-top boxes that can be used to switch them off if, for example, they leave the country. So they'd be locked according to their location. So they can only be used within the borders of South Africa. Then you get a conditional access or an access system, which is based on encryption, which is typically what a pay TV operator uses to switch you off if you haven't paid. So MultiChoice uses the Irdeto CA system in its DSTV decoders, for example. Now, the SACF and ETV and others have been pushing hard for both the control system and encryption to be included in the set-top boxes. MultiChoice is vehemently against the idea of encryption because they say that if you include conditional access in the set-top boxes, then ETV or whatever other company can come along at very low cost and start a pay TV competitor to DSTV. Now, MultiChoice argues that they invested billions of rand creating an encryption system and then getting this infrastructure, these set-top boxes, and everything around those set-top boxes into the market. And that's a huge cost associated with setting yourself up as a pay TV operator in South Africa. And if the government were to come along and give away subsidized, in fact now free, set-top boxes with an encryption system built into them, then ETV or whoever else could come along and simply launch a pay TV operator on the back of those set-top boxes at very low cost. So that's the line that they put forward. They also argue that the whole idea of encryption is very bad and no one else in the world has done it, which is true. I think Ukraine is the only exception that I've come across that has actually mandated this. So we certainly, if we went that route, we'd be going against best practice internationally. Now, the communications minister, Faith Mutambi, after the cabinet meeting, held a press conference in Cape Town, which unfortunately we weren't able to attend, but at which she was quoted as saying that the control system built into these set-top boxes will be purely for the purposes of security to ensure, for example, that the boxes are not sold outside of South Africa's borders. And that they will specifically not have a control access system built into them. In other words, no encryption, no conditional access. Mm-hmm. Which would suggest, if that is the case, and we don't know if that's going to be in the final policy because it appears the whole ANC is divided on this issue and is being pulled in every which way direction by all the vested interests. So we don't know what's actually going to be said in that final policy. But if what the communications minister says happens in the final policy, then in effect, we are not going to have a conditional access system built into the set-top boxes, which I personally believe, and I know there are plenty of people who disagree with my viewpoint, but I personally believe is the right decision. Mm. I believe that MultiChoice is right, is correct, not necessarily for all the right reasons, but I think MultiChoice is right that encryption ultimately will be bad for consumers. So, assuming Mutambi's view on this is the one that has actually prevailed and will make it into the final policy, then it is MultiChoice's view on how this thing should proceed, MultiChoice and NAMIC for that matter, and the SABC, that we should proceed without a conditional access system. But of course, anything could change between now and the final policy being published.
Yeah.
I think that is, in summary, is what's happening.
And what about the TV license issue? Because obviously this is, if there is encryption or if they do control the boxes, it means if somebody doesn't pay their license, they can switch it off, right?
That's, no, I don't think that's going to happen. I think they could, I stand to be corrected here. I'm really not an expert on this particular subject, but I'm not sure that control system, which could be used to switch off the box if it leaves the country, could also be used to switch someone off who hasn't paid their TV license. That I'm not sure about. It's possible.
But certainly if there's encryption on the box, it would be able to. Because DSTV is able to switch.
Yes, if there's encryption, if there's a conditional access system, then they could. My guess would be that no, they can't. Because that would be... that is surely the basis of what a conditional access system is.
Yeah.
Is you're going to provide conditional access, and if you don't meet the condition, your access will be cut off.
Yes.
So I would assume not. But the minister has said that to get the free set-top box... note, by the way, that the cabinet has said that there's no longer going to be a subsidy, that all 5 million households identified are going to get free boxes.
Sure.
Which I think might be the right move, because the whole process of having a of going through a subsidization process, and you can just imagine what a logistical nightmare that would be.
Yeah.
So giving them away for free may make more sense, if they can control it, of course. So they've said as well that if you want a free set-top box, you're going to have to produce your TV license, which will be interesting, because I think it's a tiny fraction of the TV earning public in South Africa that actually owns a TV license, and I can almost guarantee you that at the low income levels, the compliance with TV licenses is probably close to zero. So good luck to the government trying to enforce that.
It'll be interesting to see how they get around it, because SABC is obviously adamant on getting those licenses. You go to show you can't get rid of one once you have it.
Yes. Because the lawyers will come up. I don't know. I personally think this whole TV license thing is outdated, and they should just deal with it. I mean, the SABC is effectively a commercial broadcaster anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they sell advertising. Yeah. It's not like the BBC where they're not allowed to sell advertising.
Exactly.
Anyway, they've said the minister Mutambi has said that they want to switch on the commercial digital broadcasts by June, which I think is ambitious, but good luck. And then they're going to prioritise getting set-top boxes to the border areas of the country, which presumably is being done because the ITU has said that that they're not going to protect against cross-border interference.
Yeah, those people aren't going to get the reception channels. It's going to be
interfered with through cellular channels, signals. Yeah. Although I don't think any of our neighbours are going to be using the digital dividend bands immediately after June.
Sure.
I think they're also a bit behind in allocating that spectrum to mobile providers, but still interesting times. At least it seems to be moving forward at last, in some respects.
Even though we all knew we were going to miss a deadline.
Yeah, I mean, that's a foregone conclusion. I think it'll be a miracle if we switch on commercial digital broadcast by the 17th of June.
Yeah, I agree.
But I think we should still aim for that. Try and get there. Anyway... that's the end of that rant. what else do we need to talk about this week? So MTN's results were this week. They actually look pretty good, MTN Group results. The South African operation seems to have turned the corner, particularly if you look at the fourth quarter numbers, which I think must be a relief for the group, because the MTN South African operation has been struggling for a number of years now. They seem to finally be finding a solid footing again under their new CEO, Ahmad Farouk. Interesting calls that we've been made. In fact, followed up from a discussion I had with the Vodacom CEO, Shamil Yusuf, on Monday. He made an impassioned plea for the industry to work together, to collaborate, to reduce back office costs. He's not talking about collaborating on sort of the active portions of the network, but he says it makes no sense for the operators, and I tend to agree with him, to duplicate infrastructure in this environment where there's deflation on retail prices in the sector, in that particular industry, where there's inflation on other aspects, rising electricity costs, the energy crisis, etc. To build duplicate infrastructure, particularly, for example, with the blackouts that we're seeing at the moment, for four operators at the same site to put down four generators. It doesn't make sense. And I had a chat with Ahmad Farouk, who's the MD of MTN South Africa, about this as well. And he also strongly echoed those views, saying there's a need to work together. They also emphasized that there would possibly be a need to involve the Competition Commission in whatever agreements are put together, because the last thing we need is these operators getting together and doing deals in smoky back rooms. There needs to be some sort of oversight, I think, of whatever gets agreed to. But in principle, sharing sites, sharing fiber backhauls, sharing generators, sharing infrastructure makes sense. And what Farouk from MTN is proposing is that they have sort of almost an open book policy, saying, well, this is the stuff we can share, this is what we have, this is where it is, and you know, in future, this is where we deplant it or put infrastructure. Do you want to work with us on the, in this regard to do this? And I think it makes sense because it could bring down costs for end users as well at the end of the day.
It's just a clever way of rolling out infrastructure. I mean, we've seen with fiber to the home how ridiculous it is to duplicate what you're doing. I mean, there's no need for it. I mean,
it's completely insanity if you do that, especially if you're building networks on an open access basis.
Exactly. I mean, rather than expand to those areas where you can't get to because everybody's fighting for the popular suburbs.
Yeah. Anyway, Farouk said that the biggest challenge they may have is actually getting the engineers' egos reined in, because of course the engineers think they can do it better than their competitor over at the other operator. You know, I can build a better base station than you can, so piss off.
Yeah, who's going to pull rank on that one?
Yes. Good luck to them to get their engineering teams in check. But in principle, I think it's a great idea, provided they don't collude.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, prices and stuff like that, retail prices.
Just get more access to more people, and we'll be fully behind that.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to our regular departments. Let's do our winner and loser next. And we had a bit of a debate earlier about who to pick as our winner of the week, and it's a bit of a fun one this week. If you missed the news, Teraco and Hetzner, which are two big data center companies in South Africa, had a bit of a bad day earlier this week when the building in which two of their significant data centers are housed down in Rondebosch in Cape Town
caught fire.
It started burning down. It was an electrical fire, apparently.
Wasn't BitTorrent's fault?
It wasn't the Cape wildfires that are spreading. Or it's ironic that this fire breaks out the same week that the whole of Cape Town is.
I thought it was related at first, but
so did I. But no, it's not. There were some people on Twitter who suggested it was related, but no, it was an electrical fire that apparently broke out on the top floor of this building in Rondebosch, and the reason we've chosen these two companies as our winner this week is that despite the building in which they house their data centers burning, they managed to keep the facilities running. Even though the buildings have been evacuated, they guaranteed 100% uptime throughout this issue. And
I was certainly very happy about that because all my sites are hosted with them, with Hetzner.
With Hetzner, okay.
And I mean
if Teraco's data center goes down, it's a big problem for the South African internet, actually.
Yeah,
there's
true.
So many.
Then you've got bigger problems, don't you?
You've got bigger problems if Teraco data center goes down. Anyway, I'm sure they're both going to be reviewing their policies very carefully after this and doing a proper analysis of what caused this fire and their responses to it and what could have gone wrong and all the rest of it. But,
I was also impressed by the notifications. I mean, I, as a customer, has received as well. I didn't get from Teraco, but from Hetzner, and I saw one or two from one or two other companies hosted with Teraco. Response seemed quite good. They got a notification to people just to say that, you know, there isn't a problem, but, you know, if this escalates to a bigger problem, just you're notified of it.
Yeah, both of them did that, actually. Both of them did that. It was good reaction. I'm sure these companies have got disaster management policies in place. If this happens, we do this. If this happens, we do this, and just follow these procedures. But it must have been pretty hairy for the companies, and they got the reports coming in that the fire is on the building's on fire. I mean, the infrastructure in there cost billions.
Look, I mean, those rooms are very well equipped to handle any fire that may happen. You might just be down for a few hours, but a complete disaster is generally far away.
Anyway, as the hardy dars come flying overhead, let's pick our loser of the week. And it's unbelievable, this trade union, actually, that, you know, I think I can't name anyone who uses this institution that isn't seriously annoyed with them. The fact that, you know, I received a parcel through the post office, which is our loser of the week, by the way, that I'd ordered from China 9 months ago, finally arrived in my mail yesterday. Now the CWU, which is one of the unions represented at the post office, has gone on a go slow. As one wag on Twitter put it, who's actually going to notice, though, if they've gone a go slow? Because it's like they're normally on a go slow anyway, especially when your mail takes 9 months to arrive. And they're now threatening a full-blown strike over various grievances. So, you know, this organization is on its knees. It's facing potential financial collapse. And here is the union holding the organization to ransom once again. You know, this could be the death knell for this organization. The only thing that is is keeping it from going under, quite frankly, is the national fiscus. And the union is really, you know, is holding a gun in the post office's face, and effectively in the face of consumers who are reliant on this organization, which still has a monopoly over small items. So ZWU and its leadership are losers this week. Cool. What do you got? What's your pick this week, Richard?
So I've been playing with an app that was introduced to me by a good friend called Nuno. But the app is called Zello. And essentially what this is, it turns your phone into a walkie-talkie or a push-to-talk radio. It's obviously a lot of fun to play with, just as a gimmicky thing. But what's really nice and handy about this is there's a lot of neighborhood watch medical and policing communities all over the world, but in South Africa too, that use this. And you can actually tune into a lot of these as well. So if there is one in your area, you can tune into it. And neighborhood watches can take it up. There is a free version and a paid-for version, depending on what your needs are. But essentially how it works is once you've added the person onto your list, like you would do with any messenger program, there's a button on screen. I've put a nice camo skin on mine, but essentially you press that button, it'll take a second or two to connect, and similar to a walkie-talkie, you'll be able to then just leave a voice message that gets sent directly to the person. You can do groups, so this is where the medical policing come in very handy too, and you can actually, like I said, you can tune into them. So if you tune into them, you can't broadcast to them because you would be restricted, you're not a moderator, but you can listen to it, so you can listen if there's anything happening in your area. It's very interesting. I mean, if I can just show you a demo. Nuno, come in, how's it? And he should receive this now, if he's online.
Yeah.
If not, obviously, you'll get a voicemail. You'll get a message.
Over the data network.
Yes, over the data network. If he is offline, he's online now.
Okay.
He'll be able to pick it up quite easily, as a voicemail almost.
Are you record?
Good, thanks. We're just testing this app.
Okay, so it takes a bit of time for the two-way to communicate.
Yeah, look, obviously it's a data
sort of like practice. A two-way radio.
Affirmative.
Thanks for your time.
You enjoy playing Cops and Robbers.
No, it works very well. But it's really functional as well. Like I said, you know, especially for the neighborhood watches, I certainly would be looking at introducing some of the neighborhood watches I know to it. You know, if imagine you're at home one night and you've got something outside, you're not too sure. It's an easy, accessible way of getting this technology into a lot of people's hands. Zello.com, and it's available on iOS, Google, and Windows Phone.
Cool. My pick this week isn't actually a tech product, but I think it'll appeal to our audience. I think it's a TV show that appeals to techie audiences because it's full of zombies.
I know what you're talking about.
Walking Dead, great television show. I actually picked it up recently. It's been going for several years already, and I've now caught up to season 4. Brilliant show. I'm really enjoying it. It starts a bit slowly, but it's wonderful fun. It's ultra violent. I think the sort of gore they get away with in this TV show, they wouldn't be able to get away with if these weren't zombies. But it's good fun. It gets a bit soap opera-ish in places, but it always picks up again, and I'm really enjoying it. So if you haven't seen The Walking Dead yet, and I'm sure you have, go check it out. I think season 5 is currently broadcasting in the US. I just started season 4. It does get a bit slow in places, but persevere. The climax to season 3 was absolutely fantastic, and I'm loving it. The Walking Dead, it's my current favorite TV show, so go check it out.
Excellent. I will.
Well, that's all we have for this week. As always, if you want to give us some feedback, we'd love to hear from you. You can mail us at info@techcentral.co.za. As always, keep on reading the site and leave your comments in the comment section on the site. Until next week, from Richard and myself, take care. Cheers.
Ciao.